Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Today, a lot of issues are going to be addressed, some commentaries, your opportunity to call back and share your points of view when we're going to have two different approaches to the issue of homelessness and poverty. One will be a very popular conservative, Ben Shapiro. The other will be a liberal, a professor of history. They are diametrically opposite, and I'd like to see what your take is on this so you'll have a chance to call in. It's timely and it's topical because I'm filming as we speak a major documentary, a sequel to Poverty, Inc. that was released about 3 years ago and showing the new poverty in America and around the world. Also today, I'm going to address that controversy that the mainstream media picked up and ran with on the subject of coconut oil. The professor at Harvard said that it's dangerous. She may be right, in which case, then we shouldn't use it. I'll look at that. Also, the football player Colin Kaepernick just signed a major deal with Nike. And if you're not familiar with him, I think most people is, he's the one who chose to take a knee and to protest what had been the plight of African Americans throughout history. That's his right. And if you agree or disagree, we are all capable of holding forth our own opinions. But with this contract with Nike, I found it somewhat hypocritical, and I'll share my research on this. And if anyone in this audience is close to Kaepernick, hopefully you will share this with him. It may be, he may not be aware of what I'm going to share. Also, it was just a couple years ago that California became the first state to really launch a program that didn't allow any exemptions unless there was some specific medical need. You had to get your vaccines, and they loaded in all these vaccines, including the very dangerous Gardasil vaccine for the human papillomavirus. Now, we've interviewed the founder of the Gardasil vaccine, and we've also written articles on the danger of the Gardasil vaccine. And I've written over 50 articles with our scholar and researcher here, Richard Gale. And we've published them, over 51 articles just on vaccines. And you can download any of them and read them. They're all fully vetted for accuracy, all footnoted. And I was going to present that information on our sister station, not my sister station, but Pacifica's sister station, KPFA in Berkeley, with Bonnie Faulkner. We were censored. We were banned from presenting this information. And unfortunately, the people of California did not have a balanced and fair and objective presentation of the information pro and con. It was all pro, and hence it passed. Now, it's purely hypothetical. Would that have passed had I been able to show all the things that are wrong with the vaccines that they had in their mandatory schedule? But needless to say, we didn't get on. There was no irony at all in Pacifica that Free Speech Radio has the most draconian censorship policies of any radio station I've ever been on in my career. And that includes 12 years with ABC as their top show as far as ratings, and WOR, WEVD, that's saying something. So I think we can put a stake in that it's free speech. It's not. It's highly censored. The whole damn network is nothing but political mess, but that's what it is, all right? And no one's going to change that. They made sure of that, including, I'm sure, agent provocateurs and others who don't want the freedom to come out. But here's what has come out. So let's get this very clear and very straight and very honest. This is from the University of California at Davis. So all of our people listening from California, please pay attention. University of Davis Mind Institute study shows Californian autism increases not due to better counting or diagnosis. Quote, a study by researchers at the University of California's Mind Institute has found that the 800% increase in the number of children born in California with autism cannot be explained by either changes in how the condition is diagnosed or counted. And the trend shows no sign of abating. And this was published in the current Journal of Epidemiology. So, here's the takeaway message. We are now approaching pandemic levels of autism in the United States, but not around the world. Why don't they have the same rate of autism in Sweden or Italy or in France as they do in the United States? Are the children so genetically different, not susceptible? No. Why doesn't France have ADD and ADHD at epidemic levels? But they don't. Could it be that the quality of the parenting is different? And what about Japan that doesn't have ADD as a measurable diagnosis and doesn't have seven infant death syndrome since they stopped vaccinating for children under the age of two? And yet we have high levels of sudden infant death. And we say it's because of their posture, laying on their stomach. Give all these excuses. No, these are children who've been vaccinated. So all the evidence at this moment points to the more vaccines you put in an undeveloped immune system of a child, including neurotoxins like aluminum. And I interviewed toxicologists. I reviewed the toxicology literature. There are thousands of studies showing how toxic any amount of aluminum is, any amount of mercury. And yet squalene, polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, over 80 different toxic ingredients, not one of them proven safe individually, let alone collectively when you're giving a bunch of vaccines all at the same time. But we're the country that refuses to look for the truth. We are in collective and individual denial. And that's not going to change. There's no happy ending to this story. Why? Because both the Democrat and Republican establishment, major corporate interest, the media in its entirety, including the left, and especially the left, because they're the ones who are supposed to have some modicum of care for the average person, this is all fraudulent, it's all game, it's all stupid. And as a result, the children are sacrificed up. First look at obesity, then look at arthritis, then heart disease in children, in toddlers. Adult diabetes in kids 6 years old, something historically was never seen. And look at all the bad parenting. How about that's most bad parenting? Just look at the graduate with some exception. Kids are just not prepared for anything today, except to be given a reward for something if they just show up to brush their teeth. There'll be an award and you're precious, you're perfect, you're going to float on a cloud today. And then they go outside and they meet the real world, unless they live in bubbles. And a lot of people live in bubbles. They don't have to worry about ever facing any reality because someone's always going to clean up the mess behind them. That's parenting. We really should have an honest look at how bad parenting has become. I'm going to be doing a documentary on this very topic. I've already been interviewing Professor Andrew Harvey and a lot of very bright people about what happened to the last two generations. Why do we allow vaccines? Why do we allow sugar? Why do we allow meat? Why do we allow everything that's bad into our minds and bodies? With such advanced degrees and so many people who are professionally competent and qualified to make intelligent choices, why are we dumbing out and irresponsible at every level of our society? But we are. It's not going to change. I'm not going to change it. You're not going to change it. It's not changeable. It wouldn't matter who you put into office. It would be irrelevant because we are actually living with the notion that somehow we count, we don't. Remember George Carlin? And the politicians are what makes everything work. They don't. The technocrats that work with them and are smarter than the politicians do. And they're beholden to the think tanks, like the Council on Foreign Relations, and they're beholden to the major economic interest, who don't care about politics. It's power. And power is colorless, and it is open all the time to gaining more. But just remember this, the next time you take a kid out to be vaccinated, especially in California, you rigged it. Years from now, when the science is so overwhelming that everything that was done in the name of protecting the children is shown to be a fraud, I'm just not going to accept everything I'm supposed to do. I'm going to think first and see if it makes sense and if it's reasonable. And if it's not, I'm not going to do it. Unfortunately, we only learn after the fact. 99.999% of all parents, only after their kid is autistic and damaged by vaccines, then do they become questioning vaccines. We just can't get ahead of this. Now, that's on vaccines, and that's something new because the latest report's out. So you're going to have more autism because of the vaccine mandates in California. At what point were anyone, and is there anyone capable in the media in California of standing up, A, to the corruption within your political system from the governor on down, and B, to the power of the pharmaceutical industry to control the messaging that goes through all media? I'd like to see that. We once had a Gary Webb that worked for the San Francisco Bee, but he ended up one day getting so depressed he shot himself several times in the back of the head. So be it. Yeah. Now let's go to this professor at Harvard. Now we should believe her because, A, she's Harvard. And they only produce wonderful, brilliant people that don't make mistakes, right? Isn't that one of the things that people monitor themselves? They just say Harvard, and then all questioning stops. Karen Michaels is her name. She's an epidemiologist with the Chan School of Public Health. She said, quote, coconut oil is one of the worst things you can eat. She said it in a lecture entitled Coconut Oil and Other Nutritional Errors. And it was the University of Freiburg, where she's the director of the Institute of Prevention and Tumor Epidemiology. And here's her logic. Maybe she's right, and we should pay attention. Coconut oil is high in saturated fat, 80% or more than twice the amount found in lard. And saturated fat is known to raise the LDL cholesterol and through that the risk of cardiovascular disease. Well, there's a Guardian piece. Doesn't Jimmy Wells of Wikipedia sit on the board of the Guardian? In any case, it cites last year's American Heart Association. Now, there's a scientific organization. No, but it's a damn good public relations outfit. Accepts a lot of money from special interest groups, including the food makers. And they advise, quote, advise against the use of coconut oil, claiming there's no benefits to weigh against the risk of LDL levels increasing. So, that's the end of the story. They're right. We're all wrong. And we'll go on from there. So don't use coconut oil ever again because someone from Harvard told you not to, and of course the nice public relations outfit, the American Heart Association. Now I'm going to go on. Wait, maybe I'll add a little bit of something in here, just a smidge, not much. Let's just take a look at the American Society of Microbiology. And they have an article entitled and on coconut oil's effective as an intervention to reduce Candida albicans colonization in the GI tract, and also it alters metabolic profile in colonizing cells. Well, that's good. Peer-reviewed journal showing it's antimicrobial, anti-yeast. Now, how many women suffer from yeast infections? It's in the tens of millions. Well, damn, I found another one here. And this is from Evidence-Based Complementary and Alternative Medicine, peer-reviewed journal. Coconut oil prevents bone loss and osteoporosis. And then there's another one from Biomed Research Institute. Coconut oil is a source of lauric acid, safe and effective in treating acne-associated diseases. High antimicrobial activity. Okay. And then I began to open up the door, and I'm finding a lot of other studies, including the Journal of International Society of Preventative Community Dentistry. And it says coconut oil is an effective in combating Streptococcus mutans infections and has high antibacterial and anti-inflammatory action, and especially if you use it on your teeth and massage it into your gums. And then there's the ISRN Pharmacology peer-reviewed journal. Coconut oil reduces waist circumference, especially in males. And coconut oil reduces oxidative stress. And by the way, that's important if you're exercising because it increases, quote, the baroreflex sensitivity and oxidative stress in hypertension. That's Applied Physiology and Nutritional Metabolism Journal. And coconut oil has a neuroprotective effect, that means on your brain, especially affecting the amyloid B cortical neurons. This is the Journal of the Alzheimer's Disease. That's a major journal. Coconut oil ameliorates the side effects of chemotherapy and increases quality of life in breast cancer patients. That's in the Lipids in Health and Disease. Dieters eating medium-chain triglycerides lose more weight than those eating olive oil. So it's actually better at weight control than olive oil. And this is the Journal of the American College of Nutrition. And then coconut oil consumption positively is associated with HDL, the good cholesterol levels. Quote, coconut oil predicts a beneficial lipid profile in premenopausal women in the Philippines from the Asian Pacific Journal of Clinical Nutrition. Well, that's a lot of women. That's hundreds of millions of women could benefit from coconut oil because it manifests a higher quality HDL, the protective segment of the cholesterol. And then we have the effects of dietary cholesterol, butter and safflower oil on plasma lipids, lipoproteins, and from the European Journal of Clinical Nutrition. It shows that eating coconut oil produces healthier lipid profile than eating butter. Wow. I wonder if people at Harvard eat butter. Or they shouldn't, right? But I don't think they're eating coconut oil. Coconut oil is effective dietary intervention to reduce candida albicans. This is a separate article. Coconut oil has antiviral properties, along with antihypertension, good for high blood pressure, analgesia, vasodilation protection of heart, kidney, and liver function, protection against ulcers, and anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, anti-osteoporosis, anti-diabetic, and antifungal. This is from the Brazil Journal of Medical and Biological Research. Coconut oil prevents bone loss and osteoporosis, and that's from the evidence-based journal. Coconut oil as an effective lauric acid, and that is very good for viruses. In fact, at the Tri-State Healing Center, I used to prepare a juice every day, and the nurses gave it to all the patients who were being treated for HIV and AIDS-related conditions, over 1,200 people I work with through our medical staff. And I made sure that they had bitter melon with bee propolis. It looks like a little black salve that you put a teaspoon in, and organic raw coconut oil because of the lauric, L-A-U-R-I-C acid, and then we would put other nutrients in the juice, and they would drink that generally twice in a four-hour period with some phenomenal results. I remember once we sent out a note to all the New York newspapers, every single one, and all the media. And we asked them, why don't you send out around your health reporter to come in and interview the physicians, the nurses, and most importantly, the patients? We have thousands, like 4,500 patients, to see how they're reversing breast cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, rejuvenating people, and also people with fully advanced AIDS were being reversed. Not a single person. Nope, I take that back. There were two people who showed up from the media. The publisher, Bill Tatum of the Amsterdam News, the black newspaper, and Tony Brown's Journal, one of the more popular programs on PBS. They were interested. No one else was. Coconut oil is effective in combating Streptococcus mutans infection, high in antibacterial and anti-inflammatory action. And this is from the Journal of International Society of Preventative Community Disease. And coconut oil reduces, let's see, what else? Inflammation in the brain. So, and oh, I found several hundred more articles. So here's the issue. We have peer review literature. from PubMed, the government's, where the government go to people to get any article that they want to use at any of the different laboratories or research or before Congress, the National Academy of Sciences, or the Library of Medicine. Those are the articles I'm citing. So here's the issue. How is it that we could find all of this and they didn't find anything? Nothing. So I have a question. I'm asking the professor at Harvard, please send me the studies that you have personally overseen on nutrition, nutritional biochemistry, and the articles you have personally authored on the topic. The books that you have read on it, I'd be interested in seeing what allows you to be such an expert on a topic that you can make a statement that something is dangerous when clearly it is not. Now, for a few more things on health and healing, we go to Chalmers University of Technology in Sweden. And they're saying that whole grains, not refined grains, whole grains are one of the most important food groups for preventing type 2 diabetes. Now, we have an epidemic of diabetes, prediabetes. The latest study I saw was up around 85 million, and diabetes, about 30 million. So we're talking about one-third of our entire population is suffering. Now, will we ever have a discussion, ever, on what causes this? The answer is no. Because the high probability is on that very same network, CNN, NBC, it doesn't matter. You're going to have advertisers for products that actually contribute to diabetes. So you're going to have scientists for hire that would immediately come in and say, well, it's not true. We don't know really what causes diabetes. Or in fact, we don't know what causes anything. We have some theory. We need a lot more studies. What caused the common cold? We're not sure. Is it viruses? Which virus? The rhinovirus? There are 150 different viruses that could cause a problem. Does smoking cause lung cancer? We're not absolutely sure, but we think it might, but we don't know if it would cause cancer in any given person. Does drinking kill your liver cells, brain cells, kidney cells? Yeah, but you get over that. Wow, okay. So in other words, nothing in the world is bad for you. That's right. You got it right, Gary. Just moderation in all things. Okay. And that's our scientific community today. Wow. And you want to know why we're screwed? God. In any case, you're not going to see whole grains promoted on television. Rye, oats, wheat, millet. You'll see the refined carbohydrate product made from a one-time whole grain, like beer. Was a big stretch to say that the beer is made from whole grains. Yeah, until you took off everything that was vital to the beer, from enzymes to its fiber, from its B-complex to its vitamin E. And what you got now is an alcoholic beverage, and that just goes about destroying the rest of the antioxidants. But they play that game of showing us one thing and giving us something else. That's much like showing The Walking Dead and saying, this was 100% living person at one time, yet not today. So as long as you want to eat grains, eat them whole grain. According to the Chalmers University, this is the finding of a new study by researchers at the university and also the Danish Cancer Society Research Center. It's a comprehensive study, and it's a strong confirmation of previous research findings on the importance of whole grains for preventing type 2 diabetes. Why? Because it takes longer for the whole grain to digest and therefore doesn't spike the blood sugar level. Whereas if you eat a white bread or toast or hamburger bun or hot dog bun or a pizza crust or french fry, you're spiking your blood sugar real quick. So, I think that's very important. They studied 55,000 people over a 15-year period to come to this. Of course, they could have gone to any country in South America or Africa and found out that they have thousands of years worth of experience eating whole grains and they don't suffer from the diseases we have. Also, there is an antioxidant. It's called apocynin, A-P-O-C-Y-N-I-N, it's found in vanilla. It reduces the risk for second heart attack stroke. This is from the Oregon Health and Science University. Now, a lot of people will survive a first heart attack, but not a second one. And doctors have long known that in the months after a heart attack or a stroke, patients are more likely to have another heart attack or stroke. Now, a paper in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology explains what happens inside blood vessels to increase risk and suggests a new way to treat it. Heart attacks caused by inflammatory cells and platelets to more easily stick to the inner lining of arteries throughout the body, and particularly where there's already plaque. That's a problem. So what can be done? Well, in comes this particular nutrient. And this particular nutrient can help prevent that. It's the antioxidant apocynin. It's an organic molecule found in vanilla, and it cuts plaque buildup in half and lowers inflammation to pre-attack levels. Now, that's just one item. Now, you add in coenzyme Q10 and your vitamin E, tocotrienols, and vitamin C, cayenne, L-carnitine, and there's no reason to cut your risk substantially. Also, why we stick to false beliefs is hard for most people to understand. But here's the latest in the University of California, Berkeley. Ever wonder why flat earthers or birthers or climate change and Holocaust deniers stick to their beliefs in the face of overwhelming evidence to the contrary? New findings from researchers at the University of California suggest that feedback, that's correct, feedback, rather than hard evidence, boosts people's sense of certainty when learning new things or trying to tell right from wrong. Developmental psychologists found that people's beliefs are more likely to be reinforced by the positive or negative reactions they receive in response to an opinion or a task or an interaction than by using logic or reasoning or scientific data. So just imagine being around a group of people that all have similar values or beliefs. What is the likelihood that any one of those people will begin to question or try to deconstruct their beliefs to see, is this real or not real? Should I be believing this, eating this, doing this, or not? And I once saw this when I was young, and I was always curious about everything. I want to know how everything in life worked. And I'd take things apart and try to put them back together, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. And I would watch a group of individuals who were friends of ours, and they ate the food that today we would say is killing people. But it was the belief that this was the right thing to do because they were Italian Americans, and they believed this is how you eat, and they were all overweight. They didn't have long lives, but it was considered normal. And one day, I just brought it up. Mind you, I had no background in nutrition. And I simply asked, you eat an awful lot whenever you eat. And I didn't actually like to go there and eat because they kept saying, eat more and more. And I was a little wiry guy. I was very thin. I ran everywhere. And I didn't eat a lot. I still don't eat a lot. People are surprised at how little I actually eat. And I'm 185. At a 2.8% body fat, but it's all healthy and strong. Back then, I was very light, very wiry, and so everybody wanted to feed me. Yeah, eat more. And these people really meant eat more, but they would eat more nonstop. And so there's a good example. We're trying to bring in an outside view that maybe what they're doing is not in their best interest, not healthy, be immediately rejected because they already had accepted the feedback from each other, from relatives, from all the people in their community. This is how you eat. This is how we've always eaten. Now, of course, these were not people immediately from Italy. The people I grew up with were all born in the United States. As a result, they weren't out in the fields. They weren't doing the hard physical work. They were not eating their main meal in the afternoon. They were eating main meals at breakfast, lunch, dinner, before they went to bed, because that's the feedback they got. And then, of course, when you're not happy by any reason, frequently you go back to comfort foods, eating. So it's just one more understanding of why we don't change. We have to pull back epigenetically and look at the entirety of the environment that we're raised in. Because if there's anything that's dominant or from dominant people in our lives, that's what we're going to hang our beliefs on. And unfortunately, if it's wrong, there's a price to pay for it. And one final thought today. Researchers have discovered the key differences between the exercise-trained heart and the failing heart. And this was from the Baker Heart and Diabetes Institute in Australia. And this is something people should understand. You could be lean, not overweight, but if your heart's not healthy, if you're not exercising regularly, then you're not protecting your heart from heart disease. And hence, you're more susceptible to high blood pressure. And that can lead to heart failure or atrial fibrillation, the most common type of irregular heartbeat. And a study shows that it's the quality of the lipids we put in our diet, hence the good fats, and also the exercise that we do that can make all the difference in the world. So you have to have good fat in the diet, hence plant-based fat. Avocados, walnuts, coconut, those are good fats. And you also should have magnesium, because that's one of the best things you could do for atrial fibrillation, along with L-carnitine at higher doses than normal, but not up to diarrhea. Generally, it's 600-800 milligrams at a time. And then you got to exercise. All right, you just have to exercise. And that's what we're not doing. We're just spending way too much time in front of computers or television or on the phone. That's the latest on health and healing. And we're going to take a brief break. And when we come back, I want to share some environmental updates. Then I'm going to share some insights for Mr. Kaepernick about the contract he just signed with Nike. Good for him for getting a contract. And these are generally very big dollar amounts, multi-million dollar amounts. But I said the same thing to Michael Jordan and to other athletes, especially African-American athletes, who had signed with him, of do they owe a responsibility for how that product is made from which they're receiving enormous benefit. So we'll talk about that in a moment. Please stay with us. We're 34 minutes into our program. We're being joined by people who are taking a break from watching the Supreme Court hearings. We'd like to welcome you. I'm going to add a few more onto this coconut oil. This is from the Journal of Nutrition Hospital. Conclusion of this study called Coconut Oil, Non-Alternative Drug Treatment Against Alzheimer's Disease. The study demonstrated the positive influence of coconut oil at the cognitive level of patients with Alzheimer's, and this improvement being dependent upon the person and the degree of their dementia. But that's very positive when you consider we officially we have about 5.5 million people diagnosed with Alzheimer's. That means they could all be benefiting. Also from Catholic University in Valencia, which is in Spain, published in the journal Alzheimer's Disease, quote, improvement of main cognitive functions in patients with Alzheimer's disease after treatment with coconut oil Okay, that's good. It's all positive there, too. And then from the University of Federal Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, published in Nutritional Hospital, coconut oil, rich diet increases HDL cholesterol, decreases waist circumference and body mass, meaning your belly fat, in coronary artery patients, meaning people with heart disease who have a big belly, you're more likely to die. This shows you could be protected. And then from the University of Alagoas, and published in the peer-reviewed journal Lipids, the effects of dietary coconut oil on biochemical and anthropogenic profiles of women presenting abdominal obesity again, you can reduce obesity. Wouldn't that help? Now think of what we've now learned that coconut oil can do. It can help you if you have Alzheimer's, if you have candida, if you have heart disease, if you're overweight. All of this is good. And there's another one published in Lipids Health and Disease, and it helped with breast cancer patients. That's another one. And the International Journal of Food and Science Nutrition, University of Putra, Malaysia, antioxidant capacity and phenolic acids, coconut oil, very beneficial for health, and a whole lot more. Gargling with coconut oil is as effective as using a regular mouthwash for killing Streptococcus mutans, according to Kannur Medical College in India. So much for that. Now, to the issue of what amounts by any measure as Nike being a major problem involving the exploitation of women, black women, women living in poverty, and sweatshop labor. I've told you about the dresses and shirts and pants, 800 million garments a year that are made just in Bangladesh. We've also talked about how if you're there and there's a bridge, that a wide bridge that leads over to where the factories are, at about 11 o'clock at night, you can, if you close your eyes, you can hear just a muffling sound like someone's walking in slippers. Then you open your eyes and the entire bridge for a mile is nothing but a sea of women. They're walking home after a long day. They've only been allowed 2 bathroom breaks. There's people that time them with a stopwatch, how long it takes them to put on a patch or a zipper, whatever it is on a garment. And then they're punished if it's not the right time. They go home, and then when they get home, their family's already asleep. They have to do the laundry. They have to make the food for everyone for the next day. They have to put out all their supplies. Then they lay down and get a little bit of sleep and get up, and then they go to work again, 6 days a week. And so that's why I ask you, before you buy any garment, please look at where it was made. Was it made in a country that doesn't exploit people? Good. Right? Was it made with slave labor? Not good. And that, therefore, that's our responsibility. And yeah, we can buy something less expensive that's made with slave labor, but what's that say about us, about our moral fiber, our character, that we're willing to let someone else be exploited as long as we benefit from it? So that's what, in my personal opinion, Nike is one of the worst corporations in the world. Women represent a large proportion of the Nike factory workers. Approximately 75-80% of workers are women, and a majority of those are in their teens and early 20s. And factory jobs can require women to work very long hours at Nike, ranging from 9 to 13 hours a day, 6 days a week. Now, what if we ask this? What if the president of Nike said, we want to show you how humane our working conditions are, so we're going to ask all the members of our board of directors if their families, just for 1 month, would work the hours under the same conditions that our workers that make them their big paychecks. See how many of those board of directors would, A, agree to do that, because they're exploiting, they're making their money from that, or if they could even handle that. They're severely limited in the amount of time they can take off and are forced to work overtime. They're also there are more women employed at the factories. They represent the minority in the higher paid supervisory positions. Those go to men. And most Nike factories are now in China. and Vietnam, two of the countries of the world that do not respect workers' rights at all. You see, we conflate two issues. We conflate the really brilliant development programs that China has put in place, its unique architecture, its sciences, the high level of education of its average citizen, and at the same time, no human rights whatsoever, no freedoms whatsoever. They're now making a judgment, a schedule on every single person in China. You're now going to be given a rating system of how loyal you are. And if you're loyal, you'll be given certain freedoms. If you're not loyal, you won't be able to travel. You won't be able to get on a plane or truck. You won't be able to leave places. You can be punished. Now, that's pure dystopianism. That's where Nike's got his factory. Oh, that's where, you know, all the tech giants have their factories. And Mark Schmuckenberg and, Mark, whatever his last name is, I forgot. In any case, this little yumkin wonderman who thinks he's so smart, he is helping censor on behalf of the government of China, Chinese citizens' access. Oh, and I think they just did the same thing today when in Egypt against activists. Now, since 2002, the Independent Workers' Rights Consortium, founded largely by universities and student organizations, has been blocked, not allowed by Nike, from inspecting his factories. Well, Nike, if you don't have a problem with how you're treating people, your workers, why don't you allow people to inspect? Last year, new protests against Nike erupted due to the factory conditions in Hanoi, Vietnam, and workers laboring for hours in temperatures well above the legal limit of 90 degrees, to the point that they were collapsing at their sewing machines. Nike's also accused of cutting jobs at the Hanoi factory and pulling production from a factory in Honduras with a strong union presence, resulting in hundreds of workers losing their jobs. Companies in Europe have much better factory conditions than Nike, mostly in Indonesia, Thailand, Mexico, and Cambodia, where factories are common. And non-government organizations push anti-Nike efforts by informing the public through the media of the work conditions. And in August 2018, two women filed a lawsuit against Nike, alleging it discriminated against them in pay and career advancements, paid them less than male counterparts at the company, also contained other allegations of inappropriate workplace behavior, some of them from unnamed plaintiffs. And the lawsuit, which seeks class action status, claims Nike, quote, has intentionally and willfully discriminated against women with respect to pay, promotion, and conditions of employment. In 2016, Nike Inc.'s boss, Mark Parker, apologized to employees Thursday for allowing a corporate culture that excluded some staff and failed to take seriously complaints about workplace issues, according to people familiar with the matter. In 2016, a $5 million class action lawsuit was filed against Nike in the U.S. District Court for being deceptive and misleading in its labeling and marketing of items sold at its outlet stores. Nike misrepresented the existence, the nature, and the amount of price discounts on products sold in Nike outlet stores by purporting to offer discounts off a false suggested retail price. Nike becomes suspected player in an alleged $150 million FIFA bribery scandal. The U.S. and South American sports and banking executives helped funnel more than $150 million in bribes to officials atop FIFA, the multi-billion-dollar Goliath governing the world's most popular sport, soccer. In 2007, Nike fined $7.6 million for a settlement in a race discrimination lawsuit filed against the company. The class action lawsuit was filed against the athletic apparel conglomerate on behalf of 400 current and former black employees who worked at Nike Town in Chicago since 1999 on claims made by the employees that they were subjected to a hostile work environment when managers of the store used racial slurs in referring to the employees as well as the customers. Allegations also included segregating black employees into lower-paying stockroom and cashier positions, denying opportunities for promotion to higher-paying jobs. Anyway, I've got about 10 more pages, but I think that's enough. So here's the question. I think a lot of people will respect any athlete or any person in any field who will use their celebrity status to bring attention to any what they consider historical or current social grievance. We have a right to do that in our country. I support that right. If an athlete wants to stay standing or kneeling, that's their prerogative. We do not have a right to say you can't do that or you can do that. That's part of our freedoms. But when a company like Nike hires a person who's currently not playing, what's their motive? To exploit more the African-American community in promotions? What's his motive? If you've done your homework, I'm assuming you, your agent, has, and you're getting a multi-million-dollar deal, why would you not be concerned about how blacks and minorities and women have been treated by the very company you're receiving money from? It's just a question. It's your right to receive money from anywhere you want. But it seems like if you're going to stand up by taking a knee for something you believe in, shouldn't you be equal in all things that represent egregious acts against anyone's race or religious views or anything that would have them be considered less than sacred and less than whole? Just my thoughts. Back in a moment. In fact, when we come back, we're going to go right into hearing from a man who believes that there is a way to help people who are poor. We'll hear his points of view.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. As many times as we've loved and we've shared love and made love, it doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, baby. It's just not enough.
Why do the poor make so many poor decisions? I know it's a harsh question, but take a look at the data. Poor borrow more, save less, smoke more, exercise less, drink more, and eat less healthfully. But the underlying assumption is the same. There's something wrong with them. It was an experiment with sugarcane farmers. You should know that these farmers collect about 60% of their annual income all at once, right after the harvest. And this means that they're relatively poor one part of the year and rich the other. And the researchers asked them to do an IQ test before and after the harvest. What they subsequently discovered completely blew my mind. The farmers scored much worse on the test before the harvest. The effects of living in poverty, it turns out, correspond to losing 14 points of IQ. You know, this narrows your focus to your immediate lack. To the sandwich you've got to have now, the meeting that's starting in 5 minutes, or the bills that have to be paid tomorrow. So the long-term perspective goes out the window. They're not making dumb decisions because they are dumb, but because they're living in a context in which anyone would make dumb decisions. Poverty is not a lack of care. Poverty is a lack of cash. We should stop sending shoes and teddy bears to the poor, to people we have never met. It's a monthly grant, enough to pay for your basic needs. Food, shelter, education. It's completely unconditional. Basic income is not a favor, but a right. The great thing about money is that people can use it to buy things they need, instead of things that self-appointed experts think they need. In Dauphin, Canada. In 1974, everybody in this small town was guaranteed a basic income. The experiment had been a resounding success. The people in Dauphin had not only become richer, but also smarter and healthier. The school performance of kids improved substantially. The hospitalization rate decreased by as much as 8.5%. Domestic violence incidents were down, as were mental health complaints. And people didn't quit their jobs. Similar results have since been found in countless other experiments around the globe, from the US to India. spending 1% of GDP.
Okay, he's saying that if we spent 1% of our GDP in providing a basic income to cover three areas, food, shelter, and education, that could raise the entire standard of living for people. They would be less depressed, less likely to take drugs, less likely to become violent, less likely to make bad choices because they wouldn't have to be concerned about the immediacy of their situation. What are your thoughts? Would you agree or disagree, part or whole? Call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your feedback. I'm going to share my own later. But now we're going to hear from a person who believes in something completely different. And this is one of the more popular people on the right, and Ben Shapiro.
That you mentioned in your speech was that sooner or later they're going to have to come out of college and live with the reality of life and making a living and doing these types of things. There's enough kids in the millennial that have now come out of the colleges. How are they faring? What are they doing?
I mean, they're faring poorly. They're shocked. I mean, they're kids who are now suing their colleges. This is an actual lawsuit. Suing their colleges because they're saying, I was promised a job. I was promised an income after I come out of here. Right? The Occupy Wall Street movement was all disenchanted college kids who got out after that lesbian dance theory major and thought they were going to make six figures somewhere. And it turns out nobody pays to watch people theorize about lesbian dance. So, you know, they end up, you know, going and living in tents in Central Park and pooping on themselves. Life is a rough teacher. What the left has tried to do is extend kind of the period of adolescence indefinitely. Right? So now you're 26 and you're on your parents' health care. Okay, by age 26, I'd been married for a couple of years. And I was 2 years away from having a kid, and I already had 2 degrees and 4 published books. You know, it turns. And by the way, I'm not even a success story if you go back 50 years, right? 50 years by the age of 26, you were supposed to be fully ensconced in your job. You're supposed to have like 3 kids by that point. What we've done is prolonged adolescence indefinitely. And so what Obama's goal is, what the left's goal is, what Bernie Sanders, Hillary, they have the same goal, and the same goal is to extend college out. Right? College is not a place that's kind of a break from reality. College is the new reality. So we have to make all of human life like college. And this is what they think Europe is, which is why Europe's is collapsing. Europe is going to collapse. And it's being invaded by foreign forces, and the barbarians are at the gates. And Europe is going to fall apart, and it is falling apart. So we can play this game, but it's not going to end well. And the problem is that because the education is so poor, instead of reacting against their teachers at college who told them everything was going to be hunky-dory, instead of having the kind of all quiet on the Western Front moment, you know, where the former student goes back to his classroom after World War I, he's in the middle of World War I, he goes back and he yells at his professor and he says, you're telling all these kids the wrong thing, you're telling them that war is awesome. Instead of them going back and yelling at their professors, they say, no, it just shows my professor was right because society is unjust. Right? The lack of my $100,000 salary, that's because society is mean, and so we have to transform the society. And that's why young people, again, 40% back speech codes in American life. This is why I think the last poll was nearing or over 40% of young people are okay with socialism, like the actual socialism, because they don't know anything. They've been taught stupidity, and how they feel is all that matters. I mean, there's a video that's going around the internet getting all sorts of play about income inequality. Income inequality is the stupidest issue. Income inequality means nothing. Right? I mean, I have a lot of income inequality with Bill Gates, but I'm doing pretty well, and I don't care that Bill Gates is doing really well. The only thing we should all care about is that there are poor people. We should figure out how poor people can do better, not how to make Bill Gates less rich. But this video is going around and saying, here's a poll of what Americans think the wealth distribution should look like, and here is what the wealth distribution actually looks like. And I watch this video in bewilderment, and young people love it, and I watch this video in bewilderment saying, who told you that you get to tell the universe how wealth is distributed? Right? Who told you that you have a moral say as to how wealth is distributed? It's immoral. It's evil. It's wrong. You're going to have to steal people's labor from them. But people are not told this, and so they think that their own subjective vision of what reality should look like should govern what reality actually looks like. And it's
as you can see, they're two diametrically opposite views of how to help people who are poor. Now, we've run out of time, so tomorrow I'm going to open the air right after Health and Nutrition to give you an opportunity to share your points of view about what you see the problem to be and what you find the solutions to be. I need solutions coming from you. It doesn't matter whether you agree or disagree with anything that two different opposite people have to say here. And then after you all share your views, which I'm hopeful will be very, and they almost always are, very insightful, I'll share my own points of view on this very topic of how to help the poor, if that's the object of the exercise. And it should be, because we have an awful lot of poor people right now who are not being helped. But for today, we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.
She used to be mine.